Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Why won't you listen? Argue, why shut, won't you talk, see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And good afternoon, everyone, in the lower 48 or anywhere around the country and even around the world on the internet. Let's hope and pray we continue to have a free internet with free expression, free communication, and your thoughts as well. Karen Cataline with you. Happy and privileged to be doing my own show. I've been doing lots of guest hosting and had the pleasure of filling in for Jimmy Lakey last Thursday and Friday. And so it's good to be home on my show, Spouting Off. And you know, it is trademarked Spouting Off. I even had a terrific interview with Joe Catanacci this morning. So those people who are tuning in from Joe Catanacci's show, thank you very much. He is so generous of his time, and he's always saying the name of my website, which just happens to be www.karencataline.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and just before the beginning of the show, I was trying to fiddle with Instagram. I said I would never do more social media than that, but there's a dog contest, and I had to take a picture of our gorgeous show dog so I could show him off at Instagram. So we'll be doing that as well. And now I have to be a little more somber, because in the time since I last spoke to you, and everyone knows it now, there has been back-to-back shooting episodes, horrible, horrible, murderous shooting sprees, both in Dayton, Ohio, and before that, not even 13 hours later, over this past weekend, in El Paso, Texas. And as you can imagine, the media and commentators have been going crazy trying to offer content for something that is still rather incomprehensible. I hear things that I agree with. I hear things I disagree with. But one of the things I disagree with most, and yet we can't seem to avoid it, is the politicizing of these horrible incidences before we ever know what the situation is. And yes, they do have things in common, but more specifically, they have individuals who are pulling the trigger. And while we always look for patterns of behavior and see if there are any connections, I wrote a blog post just this morning in which I been thinking about it. I wasn't even going to write a commentary this week, simply out of respect for the dead, the injured in these two mass shootings. And then I got to thinking about how we're always looking for these broad brush, general explanations for things, especially those that are politicizing for their own political gain. It's almost as if they were, I hate to even say this, but it's true. The gun grabbers actually relish these opportunities to get out and within moments of a shooting call for gun control, as if imposing gun control on law-abiding citizens will in any way affect either criminals or the mentally ill. And in fact, we don't know yet. Do we know that these people were mentally ill? We don't. Now, a lot of people say, well, of course he was mentally ill, or why would he do that? But that's circular thinking. The fact of the matter is that if you're going to engage in any kind of pragmatic observation of what went on, you have to know the specific case, the specific history. And nobody in the mental health profession, of which I used to be a part and have that training among other strange trainings, would ever diagnose someone without doing a thorough exploration of that person's history and interview them personally. And yet, all over the internet, the blogosphere, and everywhere else, we have people making broad brush generalizations, gross generalizations of what they think may or may not be the cause. I wasn't real happy with Donald Trump either, and his immediate claiming that it was violent video games or anything else. We don't really know that. We frankly don't know a whole lot. But then I got to thinking, okay, am I going to be doing the same thing if I write a piece like I just wrote, and which I direct you to, called Leftism is Destructive to Mental Health? And I do believe that it is. This is not an indictment of the accused, of which they are primarily responsible. They pulled the trigger. They engaged in these horrible, immoral, and heinous atrocities, killing innocent people for what? We don't even know. But what we, what I do wonder about is leftism and socialism that is being pushed on a grand scale in colleges and universities, in, of course, Hollywood, and all across the left. The most radical socialist ideologues are controlling the party. I could digress, which I might. You may have seen this week, because Tucker Carlson put it on there, and I saw it before Tucker Carlson, who, by the way, is one of the few reasons these days to watch Fox News anymore. I really enjoy Tucker Carlson because of his pragmatism and his humor. I don't always agree with him, but he just strikes me as a nice human being. Nonetheless, he spoke about the Democratic Socialists of America videos in which laws and requirements were being laid down to the national convention of the Democratic Socialists of America. I didn't even bother to give you any audio because you can look it up for yourself. It was pathetic and sadly hilarious, if there is such a term. They not only were they laying down the law, but such people living in straitjackets and appointing themselves a course, of course, Lord and Master over the rest of us. My new favorite phrase is leftists like anything so long as it's mandatory or prohibited. And it's true. That's it. They don't any longer believe in free will. Remember all that 60s stuff about do your own thing and be an individual? That's all out the window now. The pretense of individualism is gone. Nada. Out the window. Now it's collectivism, collectivism, collectivism. And they don't care how contradictory they may be. This is all about lumping everyone into giant, grossly general groups. Like, for example, there are the perpetrators, which are white, often male, Christian, conservative, Trump supporters are all evil. They are, as Hillary said, irredeemable. And then there are the victims. If you are black, if you are Hispanic, if you are a lesbian, if you are counterculture, and definitely if you're a Democrat or a socialist or a Bernie supporter or anybody on the left, you're a victim, man. You are a victim. And the more pathetic and emotionally fragile you are, the more you get support for being a victim. So in this piece, I wanted to, very frankly, because it's commentary, it's opinion, I wanted to indict leftist ideology. I do hope that the remaining living murderer or accused alleged murderer in the El Paso shootings. I hear they are going for the death penalty, and in my opinion as well, they should. Maybe we'll have time to talk to our guest this hour, a little later in the program, about the death penalty and other things. We're going to be talking to Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein, a Chabad rabbi. And we'll find out more for those of you who aren't don't happen to be Jewish what Chabad is. But I thought it was important in these kinds of circumstances when normal commentary just doesn't work to talk to a rabbi, which happens to be my particular religious tradition. And I have so very much to learn. Maybe we'll talk to the rabbi about how he counsels people who are deep in grief and what he tells people and how the Torah, which again is my particular tradition, can in some way comfort and enlighten people in times of sorrow and grief. So we'll hear from the rabbi most of this hour and after our break. But getting back to my blog piece this month, which you can find at my website, leftism is destructive to mental health. Without even thinking about it, I came up with about 9 tenets of things that are so very maladaptive to mental health. And this isn't rocket science. Yes, I do have a mental health degree and I practiced in the field, but when you look at what the left is encouraging in their base today and in everyone around the country, as if this is somehow better, this is somehow superior to being self-sufficient and independent and a grown-up. So here's a couple of them for you. I probably don't have time for all of them. We might go a little long in this segment. The tenets of socialism encourage victimhood. And after all, isn't that the root of paranoia, victimhood? You know, if you belong to a certain group, you're a victim. That means you don't have any control over your life. You're simply a victim. And as one of the four in the squad said, they don't want black voices that don't speak for being a black victim. And I paraphrase, they don't want LGBT people who don't speak like they want them to speak. So independence of thought is not only frowned upon, but is basically shut up and shut down. Here's another one. Poor impulse control coupled with a continuous, I mean continuous, rage. And then the popular culture continues to tolerate criminal behavior when it's perpetrated by people who are members of that protected group, right? And if you are really good, you will blame the people that are the socially accepted perpetrator groups, like the ones I just mentioned, and you will be in the clover, baby. You will not be held accountable for anything. Here's another one, depersonalization. As a result of constantly viewing yourself in these collective terms. When you think of yourself as nothing more than a black person or a female or an American who hates being an American or whatever, and you do not do the work of questioning yourself and others and life, questioning everything, coming to understand what you stand for, what's your conception of God? And how are you accountable to either God or higher power? Are you accountable to anyone or anything other than the government? These are the questions of adulthood. The left wants to encourage emotional fragility. We've heard a couple of years ago, it's almost passé now because we've gone past it, snowflakes. But see, snowflakes are only snowflakes when they are on the receiving end of something that they don't like. When they're perpetrating things they don't like Antifa and like violence against people who simply dare to disagree with them, suddenly they don't expect you to be a snowflake. They expect you to take it. This is irrational thinking. Irrational thinking leads to mental illness eventually, or the mentally ill think irrationally. Take your pick. So there's a regression into childlike state. I'm giving myself free rein to be a mental health professional in this segment simply to let you know that it isn't just that we're looking to see whether these perpetrators happen to be leftists, but we won't know that, and sometimes I don't trust the media to tell us. But I do think that if you look at the ideology of socialism and leftism itself, it encourages a kind of mentally disordered and irrational thinking. And here's the key, particularly in people who are already psychologically vulnerable. If you have a tenuous hold on reality and you're living in a culture that tells you that as long as you're a member of a victim group, you can get away with almost anything, that's not good for your mental health, because eventually you're going to act out and you're going to get arrested or worse, if there is worse, and there is. and there's more, believe it or not. And I still got a few minutes, so I'm going to keep going. By God. There is this sense of hopelessness and helplessness and fatalism that is connected to being part of an ideology or believing an ideology that detests individualism and detests free will. If you're living in a country that has hatred and disdain for individualism and free will, never mind the fact that in the 60s the left was leading the way, but now we know where leftism and communism and all the rest leads to. It leads to the eradication of that very individualism and free will that 60s liberals were telling us was such a good idea. Now, as you look back, and I'm talking about the ideology now, not any particular individual. Now, as you look back, you ask yourself, well, was that just the means to an end, to have everybody just act out in order not to be held accountable so they could create chaos? You be the judge. I think that the left strategists are doing a lot of things to create chaos today. It is always particularly appalling when the very people that perpetrate chaos are the ones that ride in on their phony Trojan horse and say, oh, hey, we have a solution for that. It's called government. That's what it's called. Let's just give you more government programs. And we got a program for that. I don't think you ought to buy in to that Trojan horse. And you sure shouldn't buy into that, the golden calf, I think, is what the rabbi would tell us when he comes and joins us. Here's a couple more for your perusal. The inability to tolerate any kind of conflict or any difference of opinion. And that is connected to my last one. And this is by no means a complete list. This is just 9 I came up with without really thinking about it too darn much. And that is this black and white thinking. And it's more than just race. It's black and white thinking that everybody is either all good or all bad. In the old days, when I was in social work school, we used to call that borderline personality disorder. And as I like to remind people, the mental health field is an art, not a science. Anybody who tells you that just because a psychologist, psychiatrist, social worker, or mental health counselor told you so means it's true, doesn't understand that not only 90% of the mental health field is permeated with leftists, but they are as vulnerable as anyone to the trendy leftism of today. Last week, I had a guest who, very smart attorney. As a matter of fact, he was my guest last week on Spouting Off. And I had him on terrestrial radio, and he talked about his opinions about LGBTQ and about a very personal kind of story about his own daughter who's living as a non-gender, non-binary, non-gender-specific girl, and she's 12 years old. Well, I profoundly disagree with this. I profoundly, vehemently, add 10 more adjectives, disagree with this trendy, politicized notion of what 12-year-olds ought to be and how we're going to lock it in. So here's the crazy, insane left, and I say that clinically, crazy and insane left, telling us that gender is fluid, but being gay isn't. And grade schoolers are now going to be locked in to some sort of gender identity because it's trendier than just saying you're a girl with two X chromosomes and figure it out in your own time frame and in your own way. This is irrational and, in my opinion, abusive to children. And yet, this well-meaning man who I interviewed last week, he said that he talked to a lot of professionals about it, and this is what he came to understand. Now, this is what is so terrible, is that even mental health professionals are using adults as guinea pigs in their notion of what is politically, it's just a terrible thing. When you get people to believe a bunch of trendy nonsense, simply so that you end up being, if you can follow this, you end up being the useful idiot and perpetrating these bizarre notions. Sometimes, as Groucho Marx used to say, a cigar is just a cigar. All right? So sometimes a cigar is just a cigar. We are going to take a break, and hopefully we will have, I got a message from my producer. Hopefully we will have the rabbi on when we come back. When we come back, we will be speaking to Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein from the Longmont Chabad Center in Colorado, and hopefully he can give us some great information and great guidance and answer some questions about what we do in such frightening times such as these. Karen Cataline, you're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio, Station 1. Stay with us.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/AskAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Really nice rumble music there. Doug Newsom, thank you for that. I love that bumper music. That's great. We're expanding our horizons here at Spouting Off. I am delighted to have with us Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein, who is the rabbi and spiritual leader of Chabad Jewish Center of Longmont. That's Longmont, Colorado. And welcome to the program, Rabbi.
Karen, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's an honor. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. Well, it's an honor to have you. I couldn't think of a more sadly appropriate time to have you at a time like this with two back-to-back senseless, crazy shootings over last weekend. We welcome your thoughts and your guidance. Well, first, I want our listeners to know a little bit more about you, about your background, and about Chabad. What is Chabad for people who may not be Jewish? We have listeners all over the country, and you never know who's listening.
Well, firstly, hi, everyone. Again, it's Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein from the Chabad Jewish Center. Chabad is mainstream Judaism. We come back from the 18th century. It started off in Russia, and obviously it has branched out in the entire world. Our motto is share the world full of love, and we welcome in everyone from all walk of life. We're here to inspire people and to bring a smile on people's faces. You know, we spoke about, you just mentioned about coming in such an awful week. Especially to see it one after another one is just heartbreaking. As well as some of you might know, I'm a chaplain for the city of Longmont for the police and fire department here. And unfortunately, in the city of Longmont, it's been the same. It's been a terrible week. I have been called to many different calls. Unfortunately, many deaths, very violent crimes. And sometimes your heart or your mind wonders, what is going on? Where could I get some help from? How do I get some guidance? And then you put on the news and you see one shooting, and if that's not enough, another shooting. And it's really, really scary. And I would start off by saying is that there's a lot of hatred in the world. There's a lot of negativity, a lot of evil. And the other hand is the world's an amazing place. People from all walks of life are tremendously caring, and it's never been a time as good as we are right now in 2019, where literally there could be an issue going on in one part of the world, and everyone chips in together and shares in the pain, the agony, and the comfort as well. So saying that is, we believe in Judaism that God has a master plan on the world. And he has a world that it's only good. Unfortunately, us as human beings do not understand everything that happens in this world. And no, I'm not saying that a shooting, God forbid, is a good thing. But somehow God has a master plan. It's just that unfortunately we don't understand it. When these tragedies happen, I think we have to dig deep into our human body and try to figure out a way of how we could take this evil act, this horrendous situation that we're in, and try to turn it for us personally for the better. That means literally going down, you know, I personally was in Safeway right after this happened. Just went ahead and saw a homeless person there. Said, hey, could I buy you some supper? It's just the random act of goodness that I feel like the goodness could eradicate. Little light dispels much darkness. And I would say that should be the number one approach, that when tragedies do happen, and they unfortunately happen way too often, especially here in, lately in America, we have to try to make our world a better place by doing random acts of goodness and kindness.
Yeah, that's excellent, Rabbi. And as a leader, you get called on all kinds of very tragic situations in which people are personally affected by grievous loss and incomprehensible tragedy like what we watched. What I'd like to do is ask you both from an individual standpoint, people who are directly affected, and those of us watching. First off, in these experiences that you had this week, and as a rabbi, obviously you deal with this much too frequently, when people have had a real trauma and a shock like these people in El Paso and in Dayton, whom we don't know, but we know that they're suffering unimaginable pain right now. And let's just say one of them were your, you know, congregants. Sure. Can you share with us some of the things that you say to them or might say to them to just give them a little bit of comfort, a little bit of guidance and help under such terrible circumstances?
Sure. Unfortunately, we go through this all the time. And I've learned that when I come in and when someone's really mourning, I try not to give reasons because, unfortunately, us as human beings, we cannot understand reasons. We don't understand why me. I try to be a shoulder, actually, and a good listener. Believe it or not, most people want to just let it out. And I sit there and listen to people, and I try to comfort them. Unfortunately, any answer we give someone during a time of tragedy, it's not a good answer because people don't want to hear. Why was it their child? Why was it their mother, their father, anything? Why was it us? Why did God have to choose me? And the beauty of what I believe in Judaism is that God allows us to be mad at him. God allows us to be very upset of a situation. On the other hand, at the same moment, we all believe in a religion that God is the person who created the world. God is someone who loves us all, and yet we won't never understand why this tragedy's happened. So I try to really comfort them in any way possible. Certain people just really need to have someone to listen to. Certain people really need a good hug. And I just try to be with them and try to explain to them that I have no special reasons, unfortunately, but I'm here to comfort them in any way that works for them.
Bless you. I mean, that really is it, isn't it? You know, I was talking beforehand about in social work about that was the very first thing we were taught. We weren't, other than, you know, if there's an immediate need, like they need food, as you just sure. mentioned you did with the homeless person. But other than our immediate needs, giving answers is probably not what they need at that very moment. What about, and that's an excellent answer, just listen to the person, and you don't have to give answers because sometimes there just aren't any.
Correct.
What about the rest of us, other than doing a good deed and doing a mitzvah, as we call it in Judaism, when the whole country is watching these kinds of back-to-back tragedies? When I was growing up, and I know the very first mass murder was in the 60s sometime, but before that, this was unheard of. And, you know, as a commentator, I'm always talking about, well, what, you know, in the culture, what's going on here. But from the standpoint of comfort, when a country is watching, I remember 9/11, when I think it could be said that the whole country was traumatized profoundly by that event. What do you do on such a large scale as that when last weekend all of us watched these two horrible, senseless murders, mass murder?
Sure. So I think we all struggle with it. You know, like you mentioned 9/11, all of us probably remember exactly where we were when 9/11 hit. And you will remember that moment for the rest of our lives. Entire America was in shock. The entire world was in shock. For every tragedy that's out there, us as Americans, we have to ask ourselves, what do we do from here? So number one is we have to protect ourselves. So at the Jewish Center, for example, we put in better security. We have people that are armed security guards as well. We're trying to do whatever we could physically to do to protect ourselves. We have a game plan with the police department and so on and forth. We have some sort of plan, as well as everything we do in life. You know, if we're just going to let these radical young kids or whoever they are cause us not to enjoy life, not to go to a movie theater, not to go out to the malls, be scared to walk into a Walmart, then unfortunately they are winning. And we don't want that to happen. I think we have to be more vigilant, more prepared. But on the other hand, we must believe that there's a true God in this world, and hopefully this insanity will stop. So that my point of here is we have to do whatever we could physically, and we have to prepare ourselves emotionally for everything that we're getting involved in, whatever we're doing in life. But on the other hand, is we cannot let this terrorism or modern-day terrorism or local brew terrorism from within hold us back from enjoying life. So when someone says to me, Rabbi, I don't really want to come to high holiday services as I'm nervous we are I'm threatened.
A target.
I'm scared. I'm worried that we're a target. So So I answer them is, I hear you. I'm also nervous about that. And for that reason, we will prepare the best we could. We will have a police person here. We'll, you know, we'll have a squad car here. We'll have extra people that are there to protect us, security. We'll do whatever we could to protect ourselves. But I think we don't just say your question is not a question or your worry is not a worry. No, I worry with you, and therefore we're going to do whatever we could to physically protect ourselves and make some sort of plan. We do believe that there's a God, and hopefully this thing will end.
Rabbi, isn't he great? Listeners, I'm telling you, this is a great rabbi. You're young, you're vibrant, you run a, I mean, you lead a wonderful community. And if you could stay with us, I'd like to branch out a little more about Judaism in general for our listeners. Can you stay with us?
My pleasure, sure.
Great, great. Well, this is a terrific rabbi, and he has a growing congregation in Longmont, and so articulate and compassionate, as you can tell. We're going to be right back after this, so stay tuned with Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein, and this is Karen Ketelin. You're listening to Spouting Off here on BBS Radio Station 1.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
This is Karen Ketelin, host and producer of Spouting Off. Got an opinion, a guest suggestion, or a show tip? Follow me on Facebook or Twitter and let me know your thoughts. All you need is to know how to spell my name. It's the same on Twitter, Facebook, and www.karenketelin.com. Karen is spelled the normal way, no goofy Y's or Q's, K-A-R-E-N, and Ketelin is spelled K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Want more Spouting Off? You can find the complete archive of Spouting Off shows at www.karenketelin.com. All my op-eds and blog posts are there too. That's www.karenketelin.com. Thanks for listening, and if you have a moment, please spread the word about Spouting Off. And Ketelin, you're listening to Spouting Off here. What an honor and a pleasure it is to talk to Rabbi Yaakov Borenstein from the Longmont Jewish Center, the Chabad Center. And we have a caller on the line, which we're going to take in just a moment. That caller, by the way, called live, because we are broadcasting this live. You can get the podcast later at my website at www.karenketelin.com. But our caller called 888-627-6008. So if you'd like to get in on this conversation, the rabbi is open to taking your questions. Before we get to our caller, there was one thing that you mentioned, and there's so many great things that you gave me an opening to, Rabbi, and that is armed security and better security. That's a hot topic today. Can you just point to very briefly one of the tenets of Torah, and for non-Jews, that's the Old Testament to you, one of the tenets of the Torah of self-defense, armed self-defense. Where does it say in the Torah that we need to defend ourselves and our families? Because I know it does.
You know, there's a special mitzvah to mean to live and to be, you know, just like, we have to be vigilant to where we are and what we are. The point of it here is we don't want to just leave open our doors at night and say, all right, there's a God on this world, and if he wants someone to break into my house, great, They're going to come in anyway, so why lock the door? The point of it is, you have to protect ourselves. We have to do whatever it takes. I'll be honest with you. When I was becoming a rabbi 20 years ago, I never in my mind thought that this day would actually come, that we would be discussing this between rabbis, who's protecting the synagogue, going over with security or the police department our schedule, knowing when Hebrew school is, so we should have an armed guard for certain events. We just never imagined it was going to be like this. Unfortunately, times have changed, and every synagogue could do whatever they want. Just in, at least from our perspective, we spoke to the police department, and they absolutely wanted us to have at every service, as long as they run it through us and the board, we have a special security committee, and we always have a plan. And I think that is most important over here, is because we have an obligation to protect ourselves. And unfortunately, if someone does start shooting, until a police officer could come, and that could be sometimes 1 to 5 minutes, that's a very, very long time. So we're going to try our best we could to protect ourselves physically, but every synagogue or every institution could do however they want.
Super, Rabbi. And this could lead to a whole other discussion we don't have time for about, you know, we protect our money in the bank with armed guards, but we don't want armed guards in schools. And there, our children are much more valuable than our money. So Rabbi Borenstein has his head screwed on straight, I think, and he is a spiritual leader of Chabad Jewish Center. We have a caller on the line, and we would just love to take her. Her name is Dawn. Dawn, welcome to Spouting Off. And what would you like to ask the rabbi?
Hi, Karen. Thank you for pointing out that we do protect our money in banks with armed security guards. I greatly appreciate that, and we don't protect our children. Having children in the schools these days is a little frightening, and that was a good point. But I called about the rabbi's comment about the idea of it's okay to be angry with God. Two things. I wanted to say thank you for that, because I come from a tradition where that's not okay. And so I don't believe that anymore, but traditionally, and the people who are still walking in that tradition certainly do believe that. So thank you for pointing that out. But I do have one question, and that is, when you're angry with God, what do you do with it?
Great question.
That's a great question. Number one is, as a chaplain for the city, I'm the only rabbi. All my friends are priests and ministers, so we have a good time with it. Are you allowed to be upset at God? One of the things, the holiest things that we do after someone passes away is, as a child, we could say Kaddish, mourner's Kaddish, a special prayer for our loved ones. This mourner's Kaddish is all about understanding that, yes, we are going through a very, very hard time. We might be physically or emotionally very, very upset at God. And the other hand is, we do take a step back and say, God, Yitgadal v'yitgadash shmei rabba, you are the master of the entire world. You have some sort of game plan. We just don't understand it, and therefore we're mad at you. That madness or that anger might go on for weeks, might go on for months or years. God created us as human beings with free choice. When you have free choice, and you are a human being with emotional intellect, there's times that you can get over things quickly. There's times that are a sense of major loss that just take years to come on by. So I think God will welcome you with arms wide open at the right time. But he's, you know, as we say, God's a grown man, and he will accept your anger, because I think with how God created us as human beings, he understood that we are angry. We do not understand everything, and there is no way we can understand death. So with that, I say is, as long as it takes, God will welcome you with arms open. And what do you do with that anger? Every person is different. There's some people that take their tragedies, and after a little while, they're able to catalyst it, you know, to take it and it should change them. They should do something good out of them. Some people get depressed for a while, and everyone struggles with their own different needs. Every individual for their own way. And sooner or later, people do come out of it. We do know one thing. It says in Kabbalah that no one gets any sort of challenge as a human being that they cannot handle. That somehow, we don't want these challenges, but if they do come and inflict on us, we know that we had the strength to get over them.
Huh, what a great question. Can you stay with us for one more, a little bit more time, Dawn? Does that answer your question,
absolutely,
by the way? I wanted to say how much I love that as well, about being allowed to get angry at God. After all, the one, you know, the one of our great, what do they call us? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. What are they called? What do we call them? Our forefathers. That's right. I couldn't think of the word.
I am a rabbi, after all.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you, Rabbi. Yaakov, whom you're named after, is the one that I identify with, which means right to wrestle with God. So being angry with God as a person who's talking about mental health, it's, in my opinion, anger can subside much easier when you give it room and when you're allowed to feel your feelings and you don't feel like you have to act it out on innocent, unsuspecting people. It's
sure.
Those that say they're not allowed to be angry, they're not allowed to be upset, that I think have a much harder time, because then they go and they inflict their rage on people who don't deserve it.
Correct.
So, any other questions, Dawn, of the rabbi? Got another one?
No, I'm just really enjoying it. It's refreshing to hear, as Karen likes to say, the Judeo and the Judeo-Christian values. So this has been an exciting show for me. I've been really looking forward to it since I saw that you were going to be on the show, Rabbi.
Well, thank That's you great. So very much. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for your call, Dawn, and thank you for calling in and participating. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. You guys have a great day.
You too. Rabbi, I want to get slightly political with you, not real political. It always,
boy.
Just as an aside, it bothers me. What'd you say?
I said, oh boy, I know where this is going. Just kidding.
Boy.
Go ahead.
Well, maybe not. It's unfortunate that I travel in a lot of Christian circles, and so I'm kind of like, you know, the Jewish, what do you call it? Like a mascot, I guess.
Sure.
That's why I like to say I put the Judeo in Judeo-Christian, although I'm certainly not an expert on Judaism. And Christians are asking, let me go this direction instead. We've got some overtly very much Jew-hating people in Congress right now. Some people call them the squad. Some people call them the fraud squad. We have Ilhan Omar. I know what I was going to say. I was going to say that, unfortunately, very liberal Jews who don't really subscribe to a lot of the religion tend to be more outspoken about politics than more Orthodox Jews. And while I'm not asking you to speak out about politics per se, what do we do with these anti-Semites in Congress? What do we do?
You
Both
know,
Jew and Christian.
I'll be honest with you. As a rabbi, I completely, completely stay away from politics. For the simple fact is that I want to love everyone, and I don't want anyone to feel like, oh, they're Republican or Democrat, that I'm on one side of the party. So therefore, on that perspective, I completely mix out of politics when it comes to religion. I will say is that there's always going to be anti-Semitism in the world. Always. And if we try to contemplate and understand why is there anti-Semitism going on, what is it? Aren't we more smart these days, or academically way ahead of where we were many years ago? Why is there still so much anti-Semitism in the world? And the answer is really simply because it is. That means that there's no real reasoning behind it. There's no real reason for hate. It's just something that is dear. And if we know that, unfortunately, it will always be around, no matter what we do, there's always going to be the ignorant person who's going to have ignorant theory out there, then I think we have to do is we have to do the best we could to know that because there's anti-Semites in the world, we have to protect ourselves. And we have to be ready in case someone wants to use their anger out against innocent people. So all I could say is that unfortunately it will always be there. And if you don't mind, I would like to share a psalm, which
I don't mind at all. But
psalm,
before you do that, Rabbi, when you said it's dear, I'm not sure I understood what you meant when you said it's dear. You meant it's dear for other people to be hateful?
No, unfortunately, it's
not
okay.
I didn't understand that.
I'm saying that it's not okay at all, but unfortunately, it's around. It's,
okay.
I gave a class to a couple police officers, specifically to a bunch of detectives, trying to understand what is the root behind anti-Semitism. Because they thought if they could get to the root of it, they could speak to these young teens that they were claiming that they're anti-Semites, speak to them and try to, get rid of it from their system. But unfortunately, after they met with me, they said, nah, we're not going to be successful. The point of it here is because they hate simply because they hate. It's even if you start going through each theory saying, oh, come on, that's not accurate. There's so many stuff out there that hate is simply because of hate. So I say, what is the way we could change that in the world? Shower the world with love. Just be kind to your neighbor, to your fellow, to anyone around you. Just be kind to anyone, human beings. Sheer love. Love dispels darkness. Your greatness
will win. But protect yourself.
But absolutely. You have to.
You have to.
You can't be ignorant. But on the other hand, you must be understanding that love does win. Light dispels darkness.
That is so beautiful. And it's not pie in the sky as long as you're saying protect yourself from danger and be loving. You can do
absolutely.
Both.
You have to do both.
Yeah, I have to do both. But what's really a problem is when people think that they can love a mass murderer into not shooting them. This is irrational. You got to protect yourself.
That is correct.
And that's important.
That is correct.
Yeah, especially for Jews. And I will say this, you do not have to comment. It is frustrating for me, a politically conservative Jewish woman, to watch so many Jews fight against the right of self-defense. Never should there be a more obvious group of people who should believe in the right of law-abiding citizens to defend themselves than the Jewish people. Why don't you share with us a psalm, Rabbi? You're just
sure.
a joy. I'm going to have, if you're available, I'll have you on again for sure.
You got it, Karen. My pleasure.
Okay.
So I want to share with you Psalm 23. This is actually, like Dawn mentioned, this is a psalm that we say at every funeral. And what's amazing, and so I just want to connect it with this past week, with the tragedy. So any of those families that are living through it or the souls that have parted, the special psalm. And after I do it in Hebrew, I'll say it over in English, and I might give a little two-minute explanation.
Excellent.
Mizmor le-David, Adonai, roi lo echzar, binosh desheyar bitzeni, amei menuchot, naleni, nafshi yeshov yancheni, magle tzedek, leman shemo, gam ki elech begei tzom aves, lo ira ra, ki ata imadi, shipecho mashantecha, hema yenachamuni, Ta roch lefanei shulchan neged tzorai, dishan de b'shem erosh yikos yirvaya, ach tov v'cheshi depuni koi mechaya, v'shati v'etzanai, liorech yamim. Psalm 23, a psalm by David. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall lack nothing. He lays me down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He revives my soul. He directs me in paths of righteousness for the sake of his name. Though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they will comfort me. You will prepare a table for me before my enemies. You have anointed my head with oils. My cup is full. Only goodness and kindness shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord for many long years. Amen.
Amen.
So I just wanted to share that this is exactly what Dawn mentioned earlier. We read this psalm because it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall lack nothing. That means if we understand that we're his flock, us human beings are his flock, God's our shepherd, a shepherd is there to protect all the sheep. God is here to protect us and give us only good. Unfortunately, with our naked eyes, we don't see only good in this world. We see a world that has a lot of good, but unfortunately a lot of bad. But somehow God has a master in this world that is truly good. So we ask that God should bless us all of the listeners, all the people around the world, with just open, revealed good and only happiness in their days. Amen.
Amen, Rabbi. I could not possibly want to comment more than that. What a blessing. What a generous to thank you for your time and your counsel. I think that at times like this, our normal coping mechanisms just don't work. We have to look to something greater than ourselves. And thank you so much for this. And may you have a wonderful rest of your week and a good Shabbos. And I hope to have you on again in the future so you can lay on us some more Jewish wisdom.
Karen, my pleasure. I'm looking forward to that next opportunity. Everyone, again, thank you so very much for your time. What an honor. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. So for him to say it's an honor, wow, that's something. It's something to have him on, and it's a pleasure to have. I'm grateful to have a show where I could have a rabbi on who could offer those kinds of things. What I especially appreciate is the honesty of not giving an answer for which there is no answer, or at least not an answer that we know. And that kind of honesty is important, I think, to people. It gives credibility. Nonetheless, that's all the time that we have for this edition of Spouting Off. May you all the listeners, either now or on the podcast, walk in peace and in safety. And thank you for listening. And we look forward next week to another edition of Spouting Off. Thank you to Doug, my producer, and to HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when there's going to be, oh, so much more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.